Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! For little time. Hello, listeners. Welcome to She's Gotta Have It! In which we talk about season one, episode 5 of Californication, entitled LOL. But first, let's dive into what we want. So do you want to start?
I will start. I am very excited to now finish the tidying of my home and workspace. And this basement that we're sitting in, where the podcasting area is, was the last frontier, as you knew, when I put the podcasting station in. It was super easy to just put all the junk behind the curtains. Mm. And I now really want to finish that. I literally came like 95% of the way clearing up everything. And then I did kind of just, I was done at that point. So now I'm very keen to be able to locate costumes and props and know where they are, as opposed to now it's like behind one of the 5 curtains there's a pile. So I'm very excited about that, and I have the energy now where it doesn't feel overwhelming. It still feels a bit overwhelming, but it feels much more doable.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I was listening to one of our old, or not old, one of our upcoming episodes in order to write the summary for it, and at the beginning you were talking about how you had just started a break after quite a crunch time of work. You're still obviously doing a lot of work, but I have now just entered into a bit of a break time now that I'm like back from New York. I submitted a job application. I still have a shit ton of grading to do, but I feel lighter. And like the other night I came home after a walk and did 40 minutes of like frantic night cleaning, and it just, because cleaning is very easy for me to put off because I do often have more pressing things to do, and also just with my body sometimes it's like I'm already feeling tired and my sciatica is aggravated, and so I just want to lie down. especially lately. But I was feeling good. I'd come in for my walk. My like muscles were all like warmed up, so I wasn't symptomy. And so I jumped on that, and I just like took out a whole load of trash, and I took a whole bunch of stuff down to the recycling, and I swept and I cleaned, and it felt great. So I'm excited to do more of that. But in terms of what I want this week, so I was saying this to you earlier, but I am a total sucker for Christmassiness. And I say that unashamed, but I know that's not for everyone. But the thing that I wanted last week that I couldn't remember is that I really want a pine scented candle, but like a nice one.
Yeah,
because the cheap pine ones are, and I'm an asthmatic person, I'm sensitive to cheap stuff in candles or scents, or I can't, there's a lot of, if somebody's burning something in the air, like I often need to not be where that is, but certain candles and products are fine for me. So I just need to find one that's...
I'm similar. I guess it probably could be natural. Like, yeah, if it's natural pine, I'm all over it. Natural lavender, natural eucalyptus. But yes, perfumey fake scents, I find a bit nauseating often and like headachy. So yeah, I hear you on that one.
So now I need to... I feel like you'd think pine candles, because that's such a soothing smell, would be more pervasive, but I don't know where to find one. I went online and nothing was on there.
Really?
I know.
Online there was nothing.
I know. I mean, if you can find something, then I'm all ears. Yeah, and candles are expensive, but I'm ready to pay for a nice pine candle for the Christmas season. Yeah, so that is what I want.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Shall we?
Let's jump in.
So, in this episode, Bill asks Hank to step in as a guest speaker at Mia's creative writing class. During a radio interview, Hank talks about his writing and motivations. Meanwhile, Becca develops a crush on her guitar teacher, Dave, but he ends up with Mia. Ugh.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that stayed with me the most, because I really felt for that. I felt first for Becca, like, because you're like,
When you're that age and you have an intense crush, I don't know what it was like for you, but I remember being 12 or 13 and having intense crushes, and it just felt like, there's just such an intensity to it being the first time you've like felt that way about somebody. And the tender hope she has that, you know, that maybe like there could be a thing between them. Or I don't even know if she has that like as a real concrete hope, but she just wants that attention from him.
She wants his gaze or his attention. Yeah. And it was the first time you saw her to just like dart this look of hate at Mia when Mia's there in her bathing suit and like just with her normal flirty self. And it does seem like this guy's got this power even over Karen. Like, that was kind of interesting and funny to see.
Yeah, because before he shows up, Becca and Mia say something about how cute he is. And Karen's like, oh, I hadn't noticed. And then when Becca's upstairs, Karen and Mia run to the door when he arrives. Like, it's very clear that everyone thinks he's extremely hot.
Yeah. And he's probably the age of Mia. Like, there's no, like, you know, from Mia's perspective, it's like a hot guy that likes her.
It's true.
But it also... it is that same, like, it also does seem kind of mean. Like, if I'd be in her position, I don't know if that I wouldn't not date him, but it's just, yeah, I guess it's...
She obviously, because she starts out in her school uniform, and she knows that Becca has this massive crush on him, and then by the end of Becca's lesson, Mia is, like, lying there, splayed in her bikini. Like, it was a deliberate...
It is more deliberate now that you point that out.
Yeah.
It's true, she was fully dressed before. Oh, then it seems even kind of meaner.
Which is, I think, why Becca's look is warranted.
Yeah.
Because Becca can see that that's what's happened.
And even in the fact that, remember, Becca's trying to give the, like, mixed CD.
The mixed
and tape. In that moment, he's not even looking at her at all because he's totes into Mia in her bikini. And then he picks her up that night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that just stuck me. I know it's that was right at the end of the episode, but it really struck me just as a poignant moment because Becca is also just so, like, sweet and adorable.
Because she's, I think, only supposed to be 12 or 13 in this.
Yeah.
At this point. Yeah. And it seems like Karen isn't really picking up on the tension between Mia and Becca because she just is looking on like she thinks it's adorable that Becca has this crush.
Well, that thing at the end, was Karen there when she was in her bathing suit? Like, I think that was, she might have not noticed that in that part.
Yeah. I mean, she's there when Becca runs back into the house and she's obviously hurt because Dave hasn't responded in the way that she wanted.
And then the second moment that comes to mind, which was at the beginning, is such another example of how they set things up so well. Because remember, I even asked you, I was like, why did Bill come in and start saying, you know, Mia's in high school? Because you think that he's always going to be in trouble. And then and then Hank starts saying, oh, I'm so sorry, and then backpedaling.
Yeah.
And then...
this is the way that the series just maximizes on the dramatic irony of the fact that we witness this and now we know all these things that all these characters don't know. And it is a very ominous way that Bill comes in and says, like, it is a weird way to start that conversation, but he's basically saying, you know, Mia's in high school. I've been asked by her high school to come in to give a talk, but he just says, well, you know, Mia's in high school. And he just gives Hank this look, and then Hank starts rambling. And if Bill were a little bit smarter, Bill might have picked up on the fact that there was a secret there that he could have pushed to get, but Bill isn't the most tuned in of the characters, which is a feature of who he is, and we see a bit more of that as we see a bit more of his relationship with Karen. But we also saw it at the fundraiser reaction, where he, like, actually did not immediately believe his own wife about what had happened with the incident and wanted to just sort of disarm the situation instead of addressing it. But was there anything else you wanted to say about that? Because
I guess it just struck me again a really good setup. Like, I think it worked. Remember, I even asked, I was like, why did he say the high school thing again? Like, I was like, I thought it was almost like a weird disjointed dream or something the way it was presented. I guess I just noticed that.
Then we get to the school where Hank is giving a talk. And, like, as somebody who went to an all-girls school, I will say it can be a little bit like that. When there is a cute male teacher figure, there's not a lot, like, there's a lot of hormones happening. And if you're not around boys your own age, like, it's really easy to kind of, like, latch on to cute younger teacher figures. And that did happen a little bit in my high school. Not that much, but there was one teacher who was actually perpetually harassed, and it was actually kind of a problem, but in the sense that male obsessive male attention can be really scary, but like also so can anyone's obsessive attention. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that being a problem for the school. I don't really remember how it was addressed, but I remember seeing him running away from the school at one point because I think he was trying to escape some female students who were kind of pursuing him. Yeah. But when there's no, I mean, this isn't to justify what happened to that teacher at all or what's the kinds of reactions that that Hank figures in all-girls schools can get, but that if you are, like, putting a bunch of teenagers in a place and not giving them any sexual outlets,
yeah,
it will burst out in these sort of geysers of, like, often unacceptable objects, you know? And that's why it's actually really easy, then, for teachers like the creep, who I don't think we learned his name, the creep that's the teacher for the class that Hank is giving a talk in, it's so easy for him to exploit that kind of energy.
Because... Yeah. And is that the one that me even joked about, saying he won't be so hard to get? Was she joking about that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I wanted to check.
And this is Mia's impulse to go after father figures as well. Yeah. Right? And she's also, so she's sort of trying to invoke that guy to make Hank jealous.
That's right.
And she's disappointed because what she gets out of Hank is not jealousy. What she gets is a paternalistic kind of care where he's warning her off. And then he says something about how you're a nice kid, and her face just, like, falls. Because, like, Hank has just drawn that line for himself. And this is what I really like about that character and why I really kind of respect it despite the initial transgression that was unknowing. Now that he knows, it's like she's just in the, like, you are not appropriate category. But he does still... He's still wrestling with the fact that she's obviously still coming after him for his attention, and he doesn't want to be mean to her, and he does sort of look out for her, and that kind of comes out more even in future episodes. He's sort of left, like, kind of dismissing her a little bit because he's trying to disincentivize that kind of attention, maybe.
I did just want to say, too, with all the girls and the attention, he's in a leather jacket with sunglasses, like, swearing, like, do you know what I mean? Like, he couldn't have been presenting himself more in that way. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was just kind of interesting to see, because he still does that. Like, Hank definitely knows how much he's loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
By women in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually reminded me of the very first Indiana Jones movie, which I really liked, when he was teaching all the students had Love You on their eyelids, and they were, like, closing it like this to him. So just that same phenomenon of, like...
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And at the time, it always stuck out, because it's like an action movie. It seems like such an odd little add-on, but it seems really real, because I think he was a very handsome, like, professor.
Yeah.
I think that kind of stuff happens.
Being in an authoritative position, like the position of a teacher, isn't always, but it has this erotic pull for people. So somebody who might seem a little bit more ordinary if they were just your peer, if they're suddenly your teacher, there is a kind of, like, draw to that for a lot of people. Not always, but it can kind of garner this admiration kind of attention that a lot of other things don't, because it's a care position as well, right? So this person is kind of, like, taking you in under their wing and trying to teach you something, and they're also knowledgeable, and often if they're a little bit charismatic, that kind of adds up.
I felt like that. I had that not with my teaching. I've only been teaching recently, and I don't have that experience at all with my students now. But when I had interns, I do feel like a few times that action was starting to happen with interns, that I felt like they'd put me on this weird... on this pedestal of that included that they started to like me. So yeah, I definitely had that care. I was interested in what they wanted to do as filmmakers. Like, I can mm-hmm. see how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, but what I also liked is, so you're right that Hank absolutely knows that he's on some level garnering that attention, but there's still a limit for him, because then the teacher's, like, saying all these, like, disgusting, creepy things about actually wanting to sleep with his students. And there's just this look on Hank Moody's face of just genuine, like, disgust. Like, he's just, like, he's having a visceral reaction to what this guy is saying. So he's not just sort of saying, like, yeah, I get you, but you can't say these things out loud because we're not really allowed to say them. Like, Hank genuinely on some visceral level feels like that is a gross line that guy is crossing. And that's really clear.
It is. Yeah, I guess it goes back to that, like, Hank is truly what players want to be, but it's because it's a different impulse and a whole different ball of yarn. But that guy seemed like he's like, you know, like he's thinking he wants to be a player. And it's a whole different universe, but they can look the same if you mm-hmm. don't know the inside.
Yeah, yeah. And so the series does this as it goes along. Like, it will contrast Hank with somebody who seems like Hank but is different.
Yeah.
And it does that in a whole slew of different ways. But this one character is one of those examples.
I really like shlew.
Is it a word? I feel like it is.
I love it.
Okay.
I also really like, I saw it in capitals. It was like panicked nighttime cleaning or something that you said earlier.
Frantic
night cleaning. And I pictured it on a t-shirt in capitals. I'm frantic night cleaning.
Yeah.
We saw more Runkle and
Marcy
this time.
We did.
And also quite poignant for me, I remember them as a couple so strongly, I didn't know that it started on the fact that she was wanting sex and he kind of doesn't want it, because he's kind of now, I'm guessing, if this is your take, like, obsessed with the new person. And I know in the cheating realm, people have that when they're into someone else, it's sort of some weird, and then they often will sleep less with their person they're supposed to be with.
Yes. So Danny is the object
of his desire.
Often because I think it's not just some weird monogamous tendency, but because they feel guilty.
Guilty. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can tell, like, you can see the history of their relationship. I mean, just in the dialogue, the kinds of things she's saying to him, like, what's going on? Like, I know you like X, Y, and Z. She says a whole bunch of, like, really graphic stuff that, like, gives us a sense of their sex life. But you can really see that she knows something's up.
I also like the detail that she said, we haven't had sex since my last period. So again, like, they're like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that's like,
yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. So I guess that was just also something I didn't remember. And it was kind of like, oh, Runkle. Like, it just seemed more like that.
Who's such a bad liar.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. And Marcy's little hurt face. Like, she's just got this sort of frowny, confused, what's going on? And she tries a whole bunch of different strategies.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And the one she's like, just pretend I'm paralyzed. Like, I was like, that's so funny. Like, that's why they're so hilarious. And then, and again, you could see, like, Runkle normally would probably go for that.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, the two of them they play this awesome line of, it almost like, I feel like their relationship for me almost like transmutes Runkle into something else. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, he just has all these despicable qualities that I kind of like, that I should like less. And I said this, I mentioned, I think earlier, that I feel kindly towards him in ways that I'm not sure why. So I think it could be, anyway, I'm curious about that.
Do you think that's
that.
Also because you know how he evolves through the series?
Possibly, but I can't remember right now.
Yeah. Because if you've only ever seen him up to now, I think that he would seem much more despicable.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say because I've watched the series, I think, all the way through maybe 3 or 4 times. And so I don't know how to view him without all of that feature context in mind. But there's something very pathetic and cliched about the fact that he's, like, suddenly being, like, overtly manipulated by his assistant in this really predictable midlife crisis dude kind of way. Where he's kind of like, she's like this, I guess, drug or this sort of like magic portal to another universe. And suddenly, like, he can't deal with his real life anymore in a way that isn't even, like, he's not even trying to make up real excuses. Like, he's not even trying. He's just like, I have to get to work. And Marcy gives him this look like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like, he's not really even trying to be creative or like, yeah, I just, that kind of avoidy tendency when people feel like, freaked out about something, I have just personally a lot of frustration with and not a lot of respect for, I guess.
Yeah.
Not to say that I haven't avoided things, but...
Yeah, it's not the way to do stuff. Yeah, it has been so interesting, though, seeing stuff and seeing how it is laid out and, yeah, just realizing, yeah, that all of a sudden I was like, I love Charlie Runkle. Why?
Yeah.
And, yeah, Hank is more... It's more obvious and clear to me. It is true. I have watched a lot of it, so that could be in my psyche somewhere that I remember. And I guess, too, there's something about the way his friendship with Hank that also seems appealing, even though he's, like, a jerk in it sometimes, too.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Just, yeah, it's of interest to me.
Yeah. Because Charlie is a good agent. And, like, we can get into this in future episodes where he's more of an agent to Hank, because you don't see a lot of that right now. But, like, as much as Charlie's, like, his own life is a bit of a disaster, and you often see Hank saying, you know, like, what the fuck are you doing? Face your life. Go talk to your wife. Often Charlie's, like, kind of in some way saying the same thing back to Hank. Like, what are you doing? You need to write. You need to get this done. You need to, like, you know, or in future episodes where Hank is trying one tactic or another with Karen, and Charlie's like, you're being ridiculous. So there is a kind of back and forth there, even if Hank is the smoother and cooler of the two. There is a reciprocity to their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, I'm just sort of not really that interested in his breakup with, what's her face? Why can't I ever remember her name?
Now. Red-headed lawyer lady. Is that who you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a dick on that radio program. Like, that is such a dick move. When you know that your girlfriend is probably going to be listening to this radio interview, and then you throw her under the bus by making fun of people using internet language, which is, I think, just a snooty stance to take. I think it's a really boring, one-note stance to have opinions like, oh, kids today don't know how to speak anymore, or, like, the internet is ruining language. Not because I don't think that there are side effects to texting and certain kinds of linguistic communication that we have now, where people are often more familiar with certain kinds of linguistic fora and not so great at writing papers, right? So I see this with my students, but it's not because they're stupid. It's because mm-hmm. they haven't been trained. And often, this is actually an issue that I encounter with often members of my own family, but not just exclusively with them. But there's this question that people ask me about why student grammar isn't as good as it used to be. And people are really fast to want to blame kids for being, like, narcissistic and stupid. But the answer, I think, is that, like, we have increasingly badly funded public education.
I didn't learn to write in school.
High school teachers have way too many students, or university teachers have way too many students. We are often, like, so many university classes are taught by adjuncts, which are temporary sessional workers who are not paid, like, a full salary, who do not have benefits, who do not have job safety. And you are, like, it's just, you can only do so much, right? And so it isn't at all the students' fault. A lot of them really want to learn how to write essays and to write grammatically. And a lot of them are really fast learners once you teach them. Increasingly, I find it feels like an uphill battle. High schools are not equipped or equipping their teachers to prepare students mm-hmm. for university. And it's like a systematic problem. So I just find that kind of middle-aged view of what the internet has done just really narrow and boring.
And also, Hank seems so complex and non-judgy in his view of, like, women and dating. Yes, and then it seems kind of, I mean, I guess everyone has blind spots. Maybe it's just his character's blind spot, but it makes him seem kind of dumb, like, compared to everything else.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I actually can see, it makes sense for the character that he's just this grump about certain things like that, and that's just how he is. But it does seem not as astute as I suspect Hank would be.
Yeah. But, and there's a nice exchange between him and Karen where he's like, was I mean to you? And she's like, you weren't. It's a beautiful moment because you also see, like, their connection. Like, because again, like, Karen is a kind of manic pixie dream lady, but there are moments, and I think this was a nice moment, where you see something kind of subtle and, like, familiar about their relationship. Like, there's a kind of dynamic there that just in that exchange they have, you can kind of read a long history into it. But the way she's like, well, you were mean, but you can be pretty hard on people, Hank. Which is, I think, like, a function of his own insecurity and self-loathing, and that kind of comes out in this slightly pompous way when it comes to writing and literature. Like, he's also really, really hard on the director of the movie that his book's based on.
Right.
Right, because he thinks that's trash, even though Becca is reminding him, like I think I said a couple episodes ago, that actually the movie's not that different from his book. Yeah, it's not that somebody just took his idea and twisted it into some perverse pop culture product, that there was something about his book that was romantic in a way that he's not comfortable admitting.
that scene between him and Karen, I just also noticed, remember he said, oh, I love your feet. And then he kissed her feet goodbye. And she, when he does those kinds of things, she always kind of giggles. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? When he comes in for kisses or whatever, it does seem like, yeah, you can really sort of see sort of glimpses of that in them a lot.
Yeah.
And even just the whole thing, because I know he came by to see if Becca could go for ice cream, but basically it was like nighttime. He kind of wandered into the backyard just to see if Becca could go for ice cream, but she's already in bed.
Yeah.
It actually reminded me of someone from my life, whose name I will not say on this podcast, who used to just like sort of, yeah, just show up in inappropriate ways sometimes. And it just reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah.
And I do think it's usually when someone's conflicted about stuff in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which makes sense.
I want to hear about who that is afterwards. Yeah.
Actually, today, Hank reminded me of that person quite a bit. And I was like, oh, interesting. Mm-hmm, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's, I mean, it seemed kind of sweet. But I was like, oh, Hank, like, because it's kind of inappropriate to just be wandering around in Karen and Bill's backyard late at night. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. To maybe get Becca come through the back. So he definitely has this like slightly inappropriate comfort and
casual
kissing her feet, trying to go in for a kiss. Yeah. Like, he is really interestingly cocky.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but again, she does always respond, I'm going to say even more than positively, kind of giddily when he does that.
Yeah, I agree. Which will be interesting for future episodes. But spoilers. But I think that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. I do like how they're kind of shorter and there's less to chew on. So it has an interesting extra enjoyment factor from the Jill Soloway stuff we reviewed, which was so delicious and dense.
Yeah. This is a bit less dense. Yeah. But it feels nice to be able to kind of still try and pull some threads together.
Pull some threads.
And I feel like our conversations bring out more than I've ever gotten just watching it on my own.
Excellent. Yeah. No other moments really stick out to me. But it is an interesting mix. I feel like I like that it's not so dense. We've talked about that too, to have these Sunday evening recordings even seem more pleasurable and sort of less like work. I feel like it's like really excellent, almost like, oh my God, what's that term when you like something but you know it's not that great? But this is better than that. Oh my God, like a guilty pleasure. You know what I mean? Like, it's like this interesting, like halfway between a guilty pleasure, but then it's actually really good. So I think that's I just said that so convolutedly. There, I've said it better. But it's this interesting mix. Like, again, I feel like where Jill Soloway's I Love Dick is like art. It's like dense art.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's something else that I don't even know would be up there, but something else that is like really like a guilty pleasure. This is kind of an interesting middle ground that still has a lot of interesting things to talk about, still very well put together and a lot of interesting points, but still pleasurable is the wrong word because I love Jill Soloway stuff. It is certainly pleasurable. I guess just different. It's just a very different.
I mean, if Jill Soloway stuff is like a nutritious meal, a nutritious taco, if you will.
Yeah.
This feels like kind of like red wine or dark chocolate. Like if you had too much of it, it's like, this is not good, but it's like actually good for your system to have in small amounts.
And we know you can eat 12 tacos and still be good. That is a reference to I Love Dick. But
Chris Kraus proved on one episode of I Love Dick.
Taco was a good example because it's healthy, but it is delicious.
Yeah.
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 So yeah, that was a good example of me being very convoluted and figuring it out as I was going. But yes, I think, I do feel like this is an interesting tone, and it's a very good tone for our Sunday nights.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, I look forward to next time. Until then.
Until then.
Now that we've said it, we gotta get it.
Woo!